nice to see you again this evening. We want to thank you from our hearts for coming. This will be the closing session of this mini-series. We've only touched the fringe of the subject, but it might help us to dig a little deeper when we think of this great servant of God, the man Nehemiah. Now, we won't cover the ground that we have talked about, but tonight it's a different line. I want to read in four parts of four of the chapters of Nehemiah, and we're going to start in chapter number two, please. Start in chapter number two of Nehemiah. We've been thinking about his work and how God blessed him in spite of all the problems. Tonight we're going to look at the opposition that he encountered as he sought to serve his God acceptably. And we're going to read about different men. And some of the verses that we will talk about, verse number 10 is where we're going to start tonight in Nehemiah chapter 2. The Spirit of God is very specific on the names of these men that opposed the work of God. So we thank you for coming and for your interest, and trust the Lord will continue to bless the assembly and add to your numbers and give you wisdom and grace. All of us need it going forward. And we're going to learn tonight some of these basic things of how to handle opposition. All right. Verse number 10, please, Nehemiah chapter 2. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Now that's an interesting comment. Verse 11, so I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I rose up in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. And let's go down the chapter, please, a little. Look at verse number 19. Verse 19. And when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian, now there's the three of them, heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that you do? Will you rebel against the king? Now you've already heard about the work that Nehemiah planned to do and how it was finished and so on. Now that gives you some idea about these men. Let's turn now, please, to chapter 4. Chapter 4 of Nehemiah. And keep these names in your mind. You see, for example, in verse number 1 of chapter 4, but it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth, and he took great indignation and mocked the Jews. Notice verse 3. Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he will even break down their stone wall. Notice Nehemiah's response, verse 4. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. Verse 6, so the wall was built, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Notice verse 7. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, they were very wroth and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Watch the response. Verse 9. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. We could read other verses in that chapter, but we're turning now to chapter 6, please. Chapter 6, and we're going to commence at verse number 1. I hope whenever I have finished reading, you'll get these three names in your head. Verse 1. Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the valleys in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Now let me read a little more here when we're in this chapter. Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand, wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and this is still this same man, Geshem, Gashmu, as the margin shows you, saith it, that thou and the Jews think to be rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words, and so on. Listen to verse number 8. Then I sent unto them, saying, there are no such things done as thou hast said, or as thou sayest, but thou feigned them out of thine own heart. For they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work that is not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Look at some of these things. Verse 14. My God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat, according to these their works, and on the prophetess and the rest of the prophets that would put me in fear. We read this verse last night. I'll read it again. Verse 15, so the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month, Elul, in 52 days. I will finish with chapter 13, please. There are several other verses we could read, but we should read in chapter 13, and we'll commence, please, at verse number 6. Chapter 13, verse number 6. But in all this time was not I at Jerusalem. Now that and other scriptures show that he went back to Persia. For in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, came I unto the king. Now he left in the 20th year, so he was away in Jerusalem for 12 years. And after certain days obtained I leave of the king, and I came to Jerusalem, that's his second visit, and understood of the evil that Elisha did for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. Here's the reaction. Verse 8, and it grieved me sore, therefore I came forth, all of the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. Now, let me read a verse or two at the end of the chapter to conclude. You see, verse number 28, one of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, imagine, was son-in-law to Sanballat the Horonite. Therefore, I chased him from me. Now, that's one side of the coin. Here's the other side. Verse 29, remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and of the Levites. Thus cleansed I them from all strangers and appointed the wards of the priests and of the Levites, every one of his business, and for the wood offering at times appointed, and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, for good. Now that's the reading tonight, and we trust the Lord will bless some of the observations made. Now, I want to show tonight that anybody who would assume to do a work for God and has had pleasure and help and success in the doing of the task, they're going to run into opposition. You just try to do something for God, whatever the circumstances may be. And this story in Nehemiah shows that there will be opposition to the work of God. And obviously, the devil is behind it. Now you see, this man, Jeremiah, was very intelligent. And you need to know a little background here. And I just mentioned it before we get into the meat of the message tonight. You see, this man, Nehemiah, likely knew that in a former day, as is described for us in Ezra chapter 4, that these type of men were against the work of God on the building of the temple. And they sent letters back to Persia, and they got the work stopped. And if you look at the dates, you'll find out that for 10 years, there was the temple at Jerusalem was not complete. Just sat there. And God brought in Haggai to stir up the people, to recognize that they were sitting in their well-sealed houses, and the house of God lying waste. And his younger friend Zechariah brings his message as well. And of course, the book of Ezra shows that that temple was completed. But the point we want to show tonight is this, that the enemy was definitely against the work of God and didn't want it to progress. So they interrupted it. What did Nehemiah do? Well, he got letters and he got official authority from the king of his day in Persia that when he would meet these three men, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, and they had responsibility around Samaria and the maybe the northern part of that particular country at that time, that he could meet them head on and say, now listen, men, I'm here officially. I have got the authority from a human point to do what we want to do. So they were determined, these three men, to ruin the testimony and stop the work. So Nehemiah was ready. And you see, they didn't want the temple worship to continue. They didn't want the God of heaven to have his portion. They didn't want the wall to be rebuilt because it speaks of separation and security and going out and coming in and all the rest of it. They didn't want that. In fact, they didn't want the gates either. And you see, they didn't want administration and order in God's house and God's city. Now that's the tactics of the enemy. And as our brother has indicated in prayer tonight, what this man Nehemiah went through is exactly the same in our day and generation. We're not ignorant of the devil's devices. Things haven't really changed as far as he's concerned. He's against the testimony. He don't want worship from our hearts. He doesn't want to have us separated people. He doesn't want administration in divine things. So what does he do? He raises people to oppose the work of God. Now that introduces the subject of what we want to talk about tonight. Now let's suppose you and I were Nehemiah, and I read you these verses that we have read more than once when he arrived there, and after that arduous journey, he rested 3 days. And he had time to think things over and to pray to the God of heaven, and how he went round at night and assessed the situation and all the rest of it. You know, he was a man of prayer. And he had an ability, now listen to this, he had an ability to get people to do the work that they should be doing for God and glad to do it. You see, in 2010, we have people and they do the work, but they do it under duress. But you see, they had a willing heart to work. And Nehemiah was a man that could stir them up. And he could bring them as a leader, as a true shepherd. And he protected them and all the rest of it. But he got the work done. And I have read to you that in 52 days, the wall was finished. You know, somebody says, well, what is the secret of Nehemiah's success? Now, you can take a note of these if you like. But I noticed today the little word so is very suggestive. Seven statements, or thereabouts, six anyways, and the little word so appears. Let me put them quickly to you. In these circumstances, it says in verse number 4 of chapter 2, so I prayed. That's the first so. Verse number 11 of the same chapter, so I came to Jerusalem. Verse number 18, so they strengthened their hands for this good work. Chapter 4, verse 6, So built we the wall. Follow that so throughout the chapters. Verse 21 of that same chapter 4, so we labored in the work. And then, of course, the verse that I've read you, chapter 6, verse 15, so the wall was finished. These statements just tell us how the man would think and how he would act and how he would pray and how he would ask God to help him and how he would depend on God and wisdom and strength and divine direction in all his movements. Now, the message tonight is very simple. Remember what I've told you? In any work for God that will be established, wherever the country is or whatever the circumstances or the people, if it's successful, there will be opposition. Now, what I want to learn tonight from Nehemiah's chapters and his actions is how he handled opposition. Now, how do you handle opposition? Even in the secular world, in the assembly, in the spiritual life, and all the rest of it. Here's the first thing I want to notice. See this man, Nehemiah? He identified the enemy. That's a very big point whenever we're in these given circumstances. And then he got closer and he investigated their tactics, what they had planned. And then he goes a little further and he intercepts the activity that they tried to perform. And whenever all of that was over, he implemented divine order, as we'll see in chapter 13. Now, in a short time, I want to address my remarks on those four simple statements tonight, how to handle opposition. Now, if you miss the details, get the overview tonight. For if you haven't had opposition in the work of God, sooner or later, it's coming. It's a terrible thing to have to say that, but it's true. You trace it all the way through the Bible. Whenever, for example, the nation of Israel were in the land of Egypt and God was blessing them and they were developing as a nation, right away, there's opposition. You see, for example, in the book of the Acts, when the Spirit of God was working and thousands were saved and God was among his people, right away, opposition. So, number one, we identify the enemy. Number two, we investigate their tactics. We ask God for help in that. Number three, we intercept their activities, their plans. And when it's all over, we implement divine order. That's God's order. And that's what we learn tonight from the book of Nehemiah and all that he had to do. Right. First point, identifying the enemy. I want to tell you that this man was very intelligent. As soon as he arrived there in Jerusalem, and he was never there before, he found out there were three men against him. Number one, Sanballat. Number two, Tobiah. Number three, Geshem. By putting those scriptures together that I read to you, he has identified these three men, and they had certain responsibilities in the realm at that particular time. Now, I did a little research on these three men. I'll give you the bottom line. See that man, Sanballat, if you go through his genealogy, he came from the land of Moab. You check it out, do you see? See that man, Tobiah? He came from the land of Ammon. See that man, Geshem? He came from Arabia. Now you trace out in the book of Genesis how their forefathers came into being. You remember that Moab and Ammon were born in the cave in Lot's day. That was a sad situation. And little did he know under those circumstances that Moab and Ammon would be a thorn in the side of the people of God and the nation of Israel all the way through their history. In fact, Deuteronomy 23 says, there's no Moabite or Ammonite will come into the congregation of the Lord until the 10th generation. You think that out. And that statue was forever. That's an amazing statement. These are the men that are trying to oppose the work of God. Do you see that man Geshem? He's a descendant of Ishmael. And in Genesis chapter 16, through Hagar, his mother, born into the world. And these three forefathers were all products of the activity of the flesh, as you all know. Now these are the caliber of the men that are trying to oppose the work of God. And you see, it's interesting that the Spirit of God highlights this man, Geshem, and he's an Arabian. He's an Arab. And that conflict that started in the tent home and the Ishmael mocking Isaac away years ago, that conflict is still at large. It's in our world tonight, and it won't be completed and finished until Israel is in their proper place and the great millennium reign is going. And every Arab, nationally speaking, will be put down by the God of heaven. If you were in Jerusalem tonight, you wouldn't think it. God's ways are past finding out. Can you see how intelligent this man Jeremiah was? He was only in the place a few days and he had identified the enemies that were against the work of God. Now there is a sense and application that we all take people on face value. I've got to make sure I understand that. And people are 100% honest until you prove them different. That's where you have to start. We are not suspicious type of people. We accept people as we find them. But as the days of life go on, we have found out over the years that some are not true. They say one thing and they do something else. And really, in the big picture, these three men assumed to be the friends of Nehemiah and those that he was seeking to help. All right. These three men were the avowed enemies of the people of God. And I have noticed over the years of life that this type of people and person sometimes find associates and they try to do all they can to ruin the testimony. All right. What should we do? We should be on our guard to make absolutely sure that everybody is true to what they say they are and profess to be and help in the work of God. All right. Now we come a little closer. And I didn't read you all the verses. I read some of them. See this man, Nehemiah, he now investigates their tactics. We're not ignorant of Satan's devices. And he uses individuals like these three to ruin the work. It's interesting to notice now what happens next. Well, listen to this. I read you at least twice tonight that they were absolutely mad. They were exceedingly mad. There was a man who had come to seek the welfare of the people of God. They couldn't stand it. That's the type of people that we're dealing with. Well, what happened next? Well, you see, they said, see those people there? Who do they think they are? Just mocked them and despised them. They're nobodies. These Jews going to build a wall. Man, it has been down for years and we don't want to see it established and the gates and all that type of thing. Forget all of that. They don't know how to do anything. Now, the next tactic they used was they started to make fun. You see that wall you're trying to build down there? It's a stone wall. Even if a fox run up against it, it would crumple. What's the tactics? The word that we use in 2010 is facetious. Now they're coming a little closer and he recognizes this. These men say, now look, we are from the Samaria area. We're from the northern kingdom. Our forefathers were taken away to Assyria and now we're back. And here's the very king of Persia and he has given us responsibilities. We want to join you. Remember what I told you? Nehemiah knew their tactics. He has now investigated them and he's absolutely sure that they have ulterior motives and they want to ruin the work of God. What about us? Well, we're not detectives in God's assembly. Heaven forbid. But you can't be asleep at the switch. You need to be aware and knowledgeable of how these things work behind the scenes. We would like to have everybody absolutely honest, forthright, no ulterior motive. We can't judge motives, I understand that. Not to have any personal agenda and smile at the front and behind the scenes do something else. These are the men that the man Nehemiah had to work with. You see what I'm telling you? He's identified them and he has gone a little further. He has investigated what they're going to do or what they tried to do. All right. Here's the next point. He intercepted their actions, their activities. I'll just touch some of them. He recognized by what they said and the grief that they assumed to have what kind of people they were. They lived to see the day when Sanballat and those associated with them said, right, we would like to come and join with you. And we would like to build the wall. We're just the same as you are. We are your brothers. But they had ulterior motives. It's just like the man Balaam and his doctrine of mixture. And the mixed multitude is lying in the background as in other scriptures. And if they could win the day, they could bring down the demarcation and the idea of separation and separation unto God and all the things that go with it. they said, Nehemiah, will you come down to the valley? And one of the villagers there will meet you. And it's interesting that in English, it's the valley of Ono. And that's the message from Nehemiah to Sanballat and Tobiah and his buddies. Will you come and allow us to sit down and talk it over with you? He said, oh no, we're not going. Why not? We are doing a great work. We cannot come down. Now, the man was very intelligent and directed by God, I have no doubt, to make absolutely sure that he didn't sit down and talk to them and have a compromise. You see, in other situations, we have to sit down and talk. For example, whenever there was a difficulty there in the assembly in Antioch, Syria, and the Judaizing teachers were doing their thing to ruin the work, there had to be a deputation from that assembly and from Jerusalem, and they sat down and had a chat. That's scriptural. But these people are not interested in that line of things. They want to ruin the work. In fact, here's another thing they tried, same as they did in Zerubbabel's day. We're going to put letters together, and we're going to send them to Persia. And you know, Nehemiah, you are just want to have the rule here, and you want to be king. When you're against the establishment, and yet Nehemiah had direction on paper from the very throne of Persia at that time. Those boys were clever. Now, what simple lesson would we learn from that? Well, I'm going to suggest we take courage. And in every one of these circumstances, Nehemiah lifts his voice to the God of heaven, and he prays for direction and help and wisdom in every given situation. If temptations round you gather, breathe that holy name in prayer, and we lift our hearts to the God of heaven. Now here's the encouraging bit. See, in spite of the opposition, in spite of all that these people tried to do to stop Nehemiah, I read you the verse 15 of chapter 6, in 52 days the work was finished. Oh, I like that. You see, the God of heaven finished the work of creation in 6 days of 24-hour duration. Whatsoever God doeth, it shall be done forever. Nothing to be added to it, nothing taken from it. The great work of redemption, it is finished. You can't add to a finished work or take away from it either. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. We learn a pattern from Holy Scripture that every task that we undertake or project or whatever word you want to talk about it in the assembly, let's make absolutely sure that we finish it and complete it before another one is started. All right. If I have understood the situation right, Nehemiah was there for 12 years. He did a fantastic job. And we read some of the things last night in chapter 8. At the water gate when the word of God was opened and there was a conference of those people and the women were there and the children were there and the men were there, and it was a tremendous testimony to the God of heaven. And now he feels free to leave and go back to Persia and to go to Shushan the palace and to tell the king his success and so on. Now where I read you in chapter 13, the book doesn't say. He was in Persia for a while, possibly years. And he's asking the king again to go back to Jerusalem. And where we read in chapter 13, he's on his way back and he has arrived. And the very thing that he sees as soon as he gets home into Jerusalem, he's grieved at conditions. Now that's my final point tonight before we go home. This man, Nehemiah, he implemented divine order. Well, what's happening? Now listen carefully. In the temple there were areas where the nation of Israel stored things for the offerings at certain times of the year. And you see this man, the high priest, and others in the company, they allowed this man, Tobiah, to put his stuff, Nehemiah calls it, in the very chamber of the house of God. It grieved this man at his heart. And he could see right away that divine order is set aside. What did he do with Tobiah? He puffed him out of there. And all his furniture and stuff and everything he had in it, out and away. When he got in close, he found out this, that the high priest's grandson is involved with Sanballat. A daughter of Sanballat married. I read you the verse. He chased him. I want to tell you that Nehemiah was a man of God, and he was a man that feared God above many, and he had a shepherd heart, but he knew how to act, and he had the evidence. And out they went. So we should learn from Nehemiah principles how to act in certain times. I have indicated to you already, and it would appear, and we believe it to be true, that any believer in God's assembly could be involved in those six sins of 1 Corinthians 5, but they can't be put away from the assembly until there's evidence. And if there's no evidence, we wait on God until the evidence comes. And here's a man, Nehemiah, and he had the evidence, and he chased him. And out he went. Somebody says, oh, that's awful hard. Well, he was a man with a shepherd heart, and he could see the work of God was being ruined by these type of people. You see, Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, they never give up. They always come back to fight another day. So, what can we learn about all of this? Just in summary, before we go home. Remember what I said? If you undertake a work for God, whatever it may be, an outreach, a gospel testimony, ministry in the assembly, whatever it may be, and God is helping those involved, there'll be opposition right there. So what lessons do we learn tonight? Well, I would suggest these enemies wanted to compromise. Come on, Nehemiah. We're your buddies. We're your friends. Do you not know that we have got connections with the Jewish nation? Nehemiah said, no compromise here. We will stand to the principles that God has given to us, and by his grace we move on. You see, Nehemiah learned that if he was going to bring the people of God with him, he had to be patient, he had to be kind, he had to be knowledgeable, and he needed to know how to feed the people of God and direct the people of God and lead the people of God and to tell them the divine things. It has never changed. And so, sad to say, we have folk today in different parts of the world, and that's a wide spectrum. And if they had their way, they would change the principles of gathering. And to use a term that I hope you understand what I'm talking about, they would sell us out. And the truth of God that our forefathers have paid the price for and went through tremendous things, buy the truth and sell it not. People are just changing the way they change overnight. But the truth of God has never changed. The Lord help us to be kind, to be helpful, to be useful, and to have a humble spirit. Never give the impression that the folk that come to the assembly in the New Testament and move in the fear of God and seek to implement the principles of gathering, that they're better than somebody else. That's not the idea. It's a very humiliating thing to realize that other dear people, saved by the grace of God, destined for heaven, but they have never learned the truth of gathering to his precious name. And here we are tonight, in spite of our weakness, in spite of our mistakes, in spite of our failure, by his grace, we still go on. The Lord help us to keep before us constantly, there is a path, there are principles, there is a way of working, that we maintain divine things until traveling days are over. I'll just give you those four simple things and we'll pray and go home. How do you handle opposition? Well, you identify the enemy, the foe. You investigate their tactics and you intercept their activity and you implement divine order. As I've told you already, it's 53 years now since I was in Assembly Fellowships first. And I want to tell you, folk, we have seen tremendous changes. And we have seen challenges to the basic, simple truth of God. Now, you don't meet flesh with flesh. You appeal to people. You pray to the God of heaven for direction. But we need to be wise and intelligent as to the tactics that the enemy would use. The Lord stir our hearts tonight to live for him until we meet again. Let us pray.